and welcome back to the Offspring Magazine, the podcast. It's Bea, and I will be hosting today's podcast. Today, I will be continuing my conversation with Dr. Giulio Malavolta, who is a group leader at the MPI for Security and Privacy in Bochum and head of the Cryptography Systems Group. Today is part two of our conversation. In part one, we talked about quantum computers. Whereas today, in part two, we will talk about how quantum computers are applied in the field of cryptography and how they're used. And we also talk about cryptocurrencies. So be prepared to learn a lot. And again, don't worry, the conversation is not very technical, as I am no expert and I'm also learning, just like you. So don't be encouraged from listening to this conversation. So with that, please enjoy my conversation with Giulio Malavolta. Okay, so let's go back all the way to the first question I asked, which was like, what do you research? So tell me again now what you research specifically, just so that, to see if it makes more sense now that we've talked about quantum computers.
Right. So I think I mentioned this earlier, but like my research is centered around the discipline of cryptography. So yeah. That's what I'm trained for. But as I mentioned also earlier, cryptography and quantum computing, they have a lot of interaction between each other.
Right, just because cryptography is done better with quantum computers.
Better and worse. Like it's not so. For example, we cannot use some hard problems in quantum cryptography because they are not hard.
Okay.
That's one problem. I mean, of course, the other side is that you can hope to use all this physical quirks of quantum mechanics to do better cryptography, or cryptography that is just not possible otherwise. And other questions that people study are things like, for example, you know, can classical machine verify a quantum computation? So just be convinced that the quantum computation was done correctly, although you don't have, you know, access to a quantum machine. Turns out you can. Another question is about, you know, the foundation of cryptography. For example, if we want to protect our data, if we want to, you know, build cryptographic systems that are secure against quantum adversaries, how do we develop a mathematical model that allows us to reason formally about that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a absolutely non-trivial task that people have studied, especially in the recent year, quite a lot. That's all these sort of questions are questions that are really at the intersection between these two disciplines. You need to be talking about cryptography in the sense that you're really working in the domain of cryptography, but ultimately the language that you're using in your proofs, in your theorem, is the quantum language, because we are also talking about processes that happen.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense to me also now, how they're connected. And so why exactly is cryptography so important to study? I mean, you've already given a few examples.
Right.
Do you want us to talk more specifically about maybe one that you are most interested in?
Right. So I mean, you know, there are a lot of societal implications of cryptography.
I'm
a simple person. So you know, like the implication that I see from cryptography is that I don't have to go to the bank to do a bank transfer, and I really like not queuing up for doing bank transfer. I don't have to go to the post office to pay things.
Because I can just transfer it directly to you.
Yeah, securely.
Securely.
Right? So that's, you know,
only you have the key to access it.
There you go. So all these sorts of things we can only do because we have cryptography, otherwise it would be the good old days where you have to go physically to the place.
So cryptography is related to cryptocurrencies just because cryptocurrency relies on cryptography. Otherwise, they wouldn't work, right?
Right. So I'm thinking of, cryptocurrency is the thing that I was just alluding at now was not cryptocurrency. But yes, of course cryptocurrencies are...
I didn't want to lead you sidetrack. It's just, I was just like, oh my gosh, it makes so much sense now. But keep going with what you were saying for application or why you study cryptography specifically.
So, well, okay. I don't study particularly for the application. I study because, you know, of essentially curiosity. Like, you want to really understand what's going on. You really want to understand why things, like, how, where does the sort of hardness come from? Like you know, we say that there are problems that are hard. Why are they hard? How do we use them? That's, you know, those are very fascinating questions that I'm studying, and that's the reason why I'm studying. And maybe not, I'm not so concerned about, you know, like, what can we actually do from it, but, like, maybe from the more foundational level, that's why I'm curious about it. But it turns out, of course, that whatever we are doing, it does have implications, and so you have to also worry about that once you build something but that's maybe not so much what motivates me. Let me put it this way. And there are, you know, so one very fascinating aspect about cryptography is that, so there are things that our intuition would say that they are impossible, and it turns out that many times, just our intuition is wrong, and cryptography gives you a way to sort of do these things that your intuition tells you is just not possible. For example, there is one, not so recent anymore, but like one of the sort of most important topic in the last two decades is computing on encrypted data. So let's say I'm giving you we call it a ciphertext, it's an encryption of some data. And now I'm asking you, well, just please compute a function over the data, but I'm not telling you what the secret key is. So you cannot decrypt this ciphertext.
Okay.
How would you do that, right? So it turns out that there is a way for you to sort of manipulate this ciphertext without actually knowing what's inside, and then, you know, compute the output of some function of your data. In fact, any function that you want. Again, this intuitively sounds strange because you're saying, well, how can I compute on something if I don't know what this something is? It turns out that our intuition is just wrong. You can do it. And that's what cryptography allows you to do. And, you know, there is a very specific mathematical structure that you can use to solve this particular problem. So that's just one example, by the way. It's full of this kind of
things. What would be an example, though, where you want to encrypt the cipher code, the ciphertext, basically?
Right. So, for example, like a real life example.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, I want, I'm performing some medical study, I have, let's say, a mapping of the genome of 100,000 people. Now, I want to perform statistics, and I want to, you know, learn things about this data that requires some computation, but I don't have the computational power to do it. But at the same time, I also don't want to just publish this. There might be sensitive information present in this data. So what I could do, I could just encrypt them, send the ciphertext to a server that does the computation for me, then returns it back and get the output of it. That's maybe like the prototypical application of this kind of technology. Well, you can do it. I mean, in principle, that then there's all sorts of challenges to do it concretely, but in principle you can do it. And that's you know, one thing that
it seems like anyone that studies cryptography or something has so much power, because you can do things that so many other people, normal people, the general public just doesn't understand how to do, right?
Well, I mean, it's not so much that I can do things, it's just we are studying them.
Yeah.
And, you know, to one extent we understand them, but
exactly, you understand them.
But, you know, so there are multiple layers to understanding. So there is, again, understanding something on the mathematical level and then understanding something on the system level.
Right.
Those are different.
Mm-hmm. I see.
There are actually very few people that do understand them both.
Oh, and, okay, interesting.
And so sometimes there is maybe the more theory community that focuses on the math, whereas it's not always true, right? There is a lot of exchange, but I'm just saying that, you know, maybe there's not this one person that has in his brain, or in their brain, the entire field of cryptography. It's more like collective knowledge.
Okay, I see. So, like I mentioned before, so cryptography seems connected to cryptocurrency, right?
Because it is.
Cryptocurrency is all based on cryptography.
Right.
When you transfer money.
So I think it's maybe a bit unfair for cryptocurrency to sort of classify it as a subfield of cryptography. I think cryptography is something that he's used in cryptocurrencies.
Okay.
And it's needed, but there are also other aspects of cryptocurrencies which are not problems which are inherently related to cryptography, for example. There is a lot of aspects of cryptocurrencies that covers distributed systems. That's like another discipline of computer science that is not maybe, I mean, it's intersecting with cryptography, but it's not really the core of, So cryptocurrency is actually a pretty interesting example because it's something that, you know, sort of came out of the blue.
Yeah.
And if you ask researcher, they would say, oh, we invented it 50 years ago. If you ask practitioners, they would say, oh, but nobody knew anything, and then it came Bitcoin, right? So it's a little strange how this thing developed, but yeah. So that's something that, you know, clearly had an impact in the world, for better or worse. And so that's something we also studied.
Do you think a lot about cryptocurrency, or is that just something that?
No, we do think a lot about cryptocurrencies.
So also, I don't know, make the transactions the most safe as possible, or?
Yeah. So, okay. One thing is that security is not, most of the time, there's no, you know, grayscale of security.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's secure or not.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. So.
Oh, I would have always thought it was like a spectrum. Like things are more secure, less secure.
Not really. Maybe I'm oversimplifying, but like we are used to think about the following. So once you define your cryptographic primitive, so your crypto, like an encryption scheme, then it's either secure or insecure. There is no such thing as a half secure scheme. So your data is either hidden or not. There is no, you know, half hidden, right? So maybe that's what I'm saying. Of course, you can define different security models. And then maybe in that sense you can say it's more secure. Maybe we're going into a rabbit hole.
It's fine.
I forgot what I was saying before.
I said cryptocurrency. Kind of like if you guys work a lot with cryptocurrency.
Yeah. So
thinking about the problems of cryptocurrency.
Okay, and then
how to improve it.
And then I was being annoying with the
security. Yeah, exactly.
So. Without being pedantic, right? So we do, maybe a problem that is maybe we are actually looking at is how to make transaction faster. I don't know if you, how much you know, maybe I'll say something you already know, but I'll say it anyway.
That's good, because it could be that listeners don't know.
Good.
And it could also be big chance that I don't know it.
So, you know, To do a transaction in a cryptocurrency is a little different from the classical settings where you just sort of contact your bank updates some register, whatever, and then the transaction is done. It's a little bit different because there are like parties interacting in a quote unquote distributed sense. Like someone is sitting in Germany, some other people are sitting in Japan, whatever. So they have to sort of agree on a consistent view. Like if I'm making a transaction, it shouldn't be the case that I just made it for one party. It should be all. They should all agree on the transactions that have been made. So that's sort of the.
Okay.
So imagine we want to keep a notebook of transactions, and our notebook should always contain the same data, even though we are sitting in different rooms.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that's the problem.
Yeah. Wait. Is this the ledger or?
That's the ledger. You can think of it as the ledger, except that you know the ledger is an abstract concept, and there is no such thing as the one ledger. It's, you know, a collective knowledge between different people, but like abstractly you can think of it as the ledger because there is a protocol that allows these people to agree on what the ledger is.
Okay.
So, but it's an abstract concept. It's not something that is written somewhere physically. Okay. It's more like, again, it's more like maybe the analogy is like the two of us have some notebooks. I keep track of half of the people, you keep track of the other half. And then, you know, when we put them together, they form the ledger, that sort of. But separately, if we sit in different rooms, they don't. And again, like really the problem, which is called the consensus problem, is to make sure that we don't do inconsistent things. For example, if a transaction has happened for me, then the same transaction should have happened also for you. It shouldn't be the case that, you know, according to me, party A sent $5 to party B, and according to you, nothing has happened. So, because then we're in trouble, right? Did this happen or not? And so that then this procedure to agree on something, this the consensus problem, that turns out to be quite computationally expensive. Like it's a protocol with a lot of communication, a lot of rounds, so people have to wait for everybody to respond and so on. Again, I'm completely oversimplifying, but that protocol is typically expensive. So in terms of, you have to wait for this to happen. And I'm forgetting exactly the Bitcoin rate, transaction rate, but I think it's something like every 10 minutes there is. You can think of this protocol as taking, maybe conservatively, taking 10 minutes. So it's a long time. Like in computing, 10 minutes is an eternity. So the question is, can you do it faster than 10 minutes? And you know, a credit card transaction does not take 10 minutes.
Mm.
It would be very problematic if every time I pay with my credit card, I have to wait 10 minutes.
Exactly.
It would create problems. So one thing that we are looking at is how we can use cryptography to make this process faster. So there is no, maybe you should think of it, what we're doing in that space, you should think of it like this. There are some transactions for which we actually don't need to update the ledger. For example, I pay you coffee, but I don't need to store this transaction as long as maybe I trust you that you will pay me the coffee tomorrow.
Mm.
That's sort of the idea, except that I don't want to trust you, right? And vice versa. And that's exactly where cryptography helps, avoiding trusting, needing to trust other users, while at the same time not going through the expensive protocol that would actually write this information
mm-hmm.
on what you called earlier the ledger. So and that's really the kind of cryptography that we are developing here, among other things. It's used to make these processes faster, make them more secure, secure in the sense that they have better security properties, and so that's maybe our
but
angle.
But aren't cryptocurrencies super secure now? Because I think because of the kind of like this open public ledger, right? Like everyone, all the transactions have to fit.
Right. So, again, when maybe let's try to be an absolute a bit more precise about what do you mean by security?
Yeah.
So the question, I guess maybe you are thinking of someone trying to steal money from
exactly.
Yeah. So, in that sense, empirically, it has shown to be difficult to do this.
Yeah.
But it's not impossible. Like people, under certain conditions have done this. And there are multiple points of failures where things can go wrong. But in general, I would say that's a pretty solid, empirically solid architecture. But again, there is also not just one cryptocurrency. There are different designs and so on. And they obey sort of different principles. So to an extent, they are quote unquote secure, but again, it also depends what you mean by secure.
Gosh, I'm so thrown off by the security. I think
we're very pedantic because you have to, when you work for a while in this area, you have to be very precise.
Really?
When you define when something is secure or not. And you know, it's the kind of decision that seems silly, but it makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
And things become, if you want to do things properly, do it.
So with security, so either something's secure or not secure.
According to a definition.
Right, so then cryptocurrency, is it secure or not secure?
Well, you know, according to some definition, it is secure.
And according to others, it's not secure.
Yeah, okay. not very helpful, maybe. But,
right, no, I guess I...
But you know, like ultimately the arbiter is the following. Is empirically secure or not? Like, is the actual system working? I think it's working reasonably well. So that's maybe the ultimate arbiter of security. Yeah.
But what about like on my phone?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of talk about people like having a lot of access to my data without me actually having shared my data, right?
Good.
So is that the internet's not secure?
Depends what you mean.
Okay.
So, sorry. So this is nothing to do with cryptocurrency or...
No.
It's
different. Yeah.
Good.
I'm just curious to see also how, you know, what are systems that are secure, what are systems that are not secure, and then how does your work in trying to make something secure play a role.
Right. So I think maybe a big challenge in these very large systems is that they are huge. So it's very difficult, if not impossible, for us to think about them. We don't know what's happening. Like, nobody knows what's happening in this system. So even people that build this system, there is no one person that knows what's going on in the entire system. So that's the big challenge of this. And then modeling security in the system, you have to start, you know, if you want to model something secure, you have to, at the very least, being able to describe what this thing is, right? And we are not able to, because we don't know all the moving parts and so on. So how do people do this? How do people deal with this? Well, people try to abstract away, you know, break things down in small building blocks, right? For example, like one small building blocks could be an encryption scheme, right? So that's something that, you know, it's fairly easy to talk about. And it's something that, you know, it seems useful, right? It seems clearly useful. But then the question is, how does this thing behave when you put it inside of a larger system? That's a very difficult question. And that's something people have studied a lot. But again, it's very difficult. So what people have done, for example, they have developed automated tools to reason about this large system automatically. So as humans, we are not very good at keeping all this information inside of our brains, but machines are better than us, so we can use them. So that's maybe not what I'm doing, but maybe what other colleagues of mine are doing here. Right. So like saying that something is secure, it's a very difficult question to answer. And, you know, we have like our small building blocks, and we are fairly confident that they work, but then how they sort of compose together and how they behave as part of the larger system, it also depends how you put them together. I mean, for example, think of encryption, right? So encryption really requires you to keep this key private, but maybe your system just publishes it as an accident. And then, of course, there is nothing we can do as a cryptographer. As a system engineer, that you can develop your system in such a way that these things doesn't happen, that there are safeguards and so on.
Yeah.
But again, these things are extremely complicated to reason about. There is no, as I said, there is no one person that has in his head all the systems in the world, right? So it's just impossible. So we really have to try to break this problem into smaller pieces and reason about this you know, small thing that we can fit in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question. Probably it doesn't.
I guess I'm like, I mean, it doesn't matter. I guess it's funny how, you know, you throw around security or secure systems, just, you know, the term, you just throw it around. We use it all the time.
Yes.
But then there seems to be like a very clear definition and a very clear way in which you should be using that.
No, but we use ill-defined concepts all the time. So
it's okay.
We talk about consciousness and
right.
and thoughts and reasoning. These are not well-defined concepts. So it's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So maybe you know, I'm overly pedantic on this.
Right,
thing,
right.
So
back to cryptocurrencies.
So
I guess we were talking about the whole cryptography. Do you know a lot about like how cryptocurrencies work?
I did study, you know, the basic principles of cryptocurrencies, if you're asking me about.
Yeah, can you explain them to me?
Right. Good. So
just because I've tried really hard to learn about it, and I don't know, I find it very hard to understand. And I don't think I'm the only one that doesn't understand cryptocurrencies.
Okay. So maybe I'll try to give like a bit of an abstract explanation about the problem, and then what's the basic principle. And maybe let me make a disclaimer now that things are more complicated than I'm going to, and maybe I'm misrepresenting, but I'll do it anyway, and hopefully people will not get offended. So here's the thing, here's the problem that we are trying to solve, which is related to what we were talking about earlier. So it starts from this problem. We want to maintain a system in a distributed sense, which is consistent. And the system is actually a system of transactions. So think about it the following. If there was just one ledger, you should think of it that like a bank. It's very easy. You just have one notebook. You can write all the transactions in one notebook. And And, you know, then everybody can just come and look at this notebook and everything is fine and easy because it's quote unquote centralized, right? There's only one notebook. Now, you know, the original motivation behind cryptocurrencies and all this this technology was to get rid of this one central authority that controls all the transaction and to sort of distribute the trust among different people in the globe. Can be whoever, right? So again, maybe let's try to think of it as an abstract level, so without talking about politics too much. But so that's the problem. And now the question is, how do you make sure that all the notebooks that we keep around, they are in a consistent state? So that's the consensus problem.
Right, which we talked about
which
before.
We talked
mm-hmm,
about.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what cryptocurrencies help to solve. Cryptocurrency is nothing more than essentially what we called earlier a ledger, where we just store the movements of the coins. But there is, like, at least in principle, there is not much more than that. It's really just this. So really the question is, let's say that two people that participate into this system, they come up with two notebooks which are inconsistent. Who's right? Not clear, right?
Yeah.
So and when you're trying to design, so this is a fundamental problem that people face in this. And when you're trying to design such system, you can say, okay, well, just flip a coin and one of the two will be right. So here's a solution, right? Okay, so you could try to implement this, but then you quickly realize that, wait a minute, what if one of these persons is actually a corrupted user, is a malicious player, right? So you have to think in this terms,
mm-hmm.
right? What if this person is a corrupted user? You know, if I flip a coin with 50% probability, he will be right, and he will maybe forge a transaction, like steal some coins, or like pretend that something, you know, that happened did not happen, so he gets back his money. So he can do all sorts of crazy things. We don't want to do that. So yeah, so flipping a random coin is not a good idea. So let's take this idea and throw it in the trash bin. But then how do we do it? And then people say, okay, well, we could design a voting system, okay? Right, for example, you know, all the participants come together and they vote whom
yeah.
they think is right. Hopefully there will not be ties most of the time. And then if there is a tie, you run it again, whatever, right? This is one system. And I say, okay, that sounds like more robust ideas. And so the reason why this idea is more robust is because now the attacker needs to corrupt not only one node, but the majority of the nodes, right? By node, I mean a participant in the system, because now he has to win the election, right? So he has to sort of, this is a much more complicated task, right? You know, maybe my smartphone has a virus, but you know, all the smartphone of Europe have a virus, maybe
yeah.
not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's, now it becomes much more robust. This is the first idea. It turns out that this doesn't work quite yet.
Mm.
And the problem is that, am I going
too
technical?
No, for sure not. No, this is all understandable.
All good, fantastic.
Yeah.
So again, like, maybe let's take a step back. We are trying to solve this consensus problem. Now we devise this system with voting, okay? But one problem is, okay, so now how do you decide who participates to this vote? So that's the hard question, right? And that this is a very difficult question because, you know, you don't know, like as a human, you can just say, okay, you know, if you're a human, you can participate, right? But machines are not recognizable. So in fact, I could just take my machine and spawn a billion machines out of it by just having, I don't know, a billion parallel processors. Now, suddenly I have a much more voting power than, you know, someone with just one laptop. So that's also not good, right?
Yeah.
So that means that an attacker can just like buy a very expensive computer or just, you know, impersonate a lot of identities and so on. And that's not good. So you need a way to sort of make sure that whoever is participating in this election is actually, well, an actual entity, right? So ideally you want to ensure that it's a human, but over the internet it's hard to transfer humans, so you can only transfer data. So
but surely though, through through data you can tell if it's a human or a robot, right?
No, it's hard to say.
It's hard to say.
So also you want something that doesn't require... So first of all,
too much effort.
You also don't want something that is automated, right?
Right, yeah.
So, and you know, maybe us, we can recognize, but you don't want a human to do this process every time.
Like, yeah, no, I agree, yeah.
So then it becomes the question of whether a machine can understand with an algorithm. They're not good at this.
Yeah.
Very easy to fool. So how do they do it? Well, the sort of the idea of the one idea maybe at the base of Bitcoin is that if you have done some computation, it means that you invested some energy in this process, and that sort of grants you voting rights. Okay, so that's maybe the idea. And now the point is that, you know, you cannot just spawn 100 billion machines, right? But you really have to do some work to be able to participate in this election. Maybe you have heard of like proof of work. That's the one thing.
Okay, I've not heard of proof
of
work, but
whatever. Okay, so that's how maybe the principle behind the consensus protocol of Bitcoin. And this is not the only method. There are other methods. But really the problem that they are sort of trying to solve is the same. So how do you ensure that people that actually participate in a particular decision, they are people who are invested in this network, and not just, you know, I don't know if you know what are botnets? Botnets are just machines that don't exist.
Yeah, right. There was also like huge talk that, like, I mean, on Twitter, for example, there were loads of bots, but also that in the Russian and in the American elections, like, with the Russia involvement, that it was all through bots.
Yeah, you see, it's a mess.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And you want to avoid this kind of, you know, the bots like taking decisions and
yeah.
So you
yeah,
want
yeah.
to really make sure that there is something behind every entity that takes a decision.
Yeah.
And the way Bitcoin does it is by forcing them to do some calculation. And it's a quote unquote expensive calculation.
Is this like related to Bitcoin mining?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay, so this is, so basically you have to be a Bitcoin miner to
take the decision.
Okay.
I'm oversimplifying.
Yeah.
A lot. But again, I'm trying to sort of abstract the principle, and then from that, you know, how to actually implement it, it's something that require a lot of different ideas, but maybe this is sort of the core principle.
How does the blockchain play a role in this?
So a blockchain is nothing more but sort of subsequent snapshot of the books, of this ledger that you are. So, you know, what was the state of the system at time one, then what happened, like the transactions that happened, and then transactions that happened afterwards and so on. So those are what you would call the blocks of the blockchain, you have to make sure that you can safely backtrack and go forward when you're sort of reading the transaction. The attacker should not be able to sort of lead you off to a different.
And so through the blockchain technology, you just kind of, I don't know, like regulate everything. You make sure that everything is following its order.
So that's more like, I would say maybe that the blockchain is sort of more the data structure.
Yeah.
That we use to implement this quote-unquote ledger. So the ledger is stored in the form of a sequence of blocks. Again, oversimplifying, omitting a lot of details, there are different ways to do it, blah, 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 but that's the principle.
That makes a lot of sense. And so all cryptocurrencies all have a blockchain, right? Like, they all need a blockchain.
Well, not necessarily. Like, there are some cryptocurrencies there might be some cryptocurrencies that use different data structures, but I think the most popular ones, they all use a blockchain. Maybe the blockchain is sort of, I don't know, think of the, what's a good analogy for this? So there's the, you know, there's the principle, which, you know, has nothing to do with the blocks and so on, but that's then there's also the way you implement it, which is you use these blocks but you could think of a system that doesn't use blockchains.
There's a huge like rise in government-based cryptocurrencies.
Yes.
Because I guess we started off with Bitcoin and all that. That was, they were all company run, right?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say company run, it's more like community.
Or, yeah, exactly. Whereas now, I mean, you see it with the Chinese Yuan, And then also in Europe, there's a lot of people that are saying that they want to introduce central bank digital currencies in the future. And there's a lot of research being done in that.
Yeah.
How are they different to, let's say, Bitcoin, for example?
Yeah, so I'm not, you know, an expert.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's going on that level.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can consider, I think it is a slightly different settings in the sense that, so the sort of environment where Bitcoin was developed, again, from a technical perspective,
yeah.
is the environment which is fully distributed. You don't know anything about any other user, right? Anybody in principle can join the network and start mining, so taking part of this
yeah.
decision. So you don't really make any distinction between, you know, it is someone from a company, it is a private individual.
So it's all anonymous, right?
That's a different question. I'm just saying that, so maybe I don't want to go into another.
Right. Yeah,
we cannot talk about that
yeah,
later. But
yeah.
I'm just saying there is no entrance barrier. You know, I as an individual can start mining Bitcoin. Now, you know, the question is whether I will be effective at doing that. It's a different question, but like in principle, I can go. Now, when you start talking about, you know, banks implementing their own internal cryptocurrencies, I think it's a slightly different settings, because now, as an individual, can I join this system? I would presume not, right?
Yeah.
So then you really are talking about a slightly different model. And now you're asking, you can ask, you know, do they need a cryptocurrency or could they just do, you know, with a different structure?
But also just like from a technological point of view, would they just work in the same way where you also have the blockchain? I guess you wouldn't really mine anything though, because you don't need to.
Yeah, I would say it really depends on the settings that you're considering. If you're, for example, if you really have a, you know, a way to distinguish parties which are taking part to this operation,
yeah.
and you can clearly distinguish who is corrupted and who is not, then you probably don't need this mechanism. But, you know, it really depends on the kind of attacker model and the kind of, you know, trust that you're willing to put in nodes and so on. So I don't think there is a silver bullet of, you know, oh, here you have blockchains and here you have like centralized currency.
Yeah.
It's more like a set of techniques, a set of mathematical data structures and cryptographic tools that you can use to improve your systems in certain ways. But it's not just like a monolithic that you control. I mean, you can do it, of course. You can, you know,
yeah.
you can take, you know, the same code that Bitcoin has and transport it to, you know, the European Central Bank. But is it really useful?
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to ask this question.
And so if we go back to just like the way cryptocurrency, like the basics of it,
mm-hmm.
what we were talking about before with the miners and stuff. So is it all anonymous? Like all the transactions that are done are all fully anonymous?
Good. That's a very difficult question. And I think by now it's pretty well understood that for Bitcoin the answer is no. So that, you know, you don't have your name written on the Bitcoin net, but you have an identifier which is fixed for you, right? So it doesn't have to do anything with your identity. But in the Bitcoin network, when you join the network, you have a so-called public key, and that public key is, you know, think of it as your digital identity. It's cool, with quotation mark, right? Now it is anonymous in the sense that in principle, I don't know who is behind this key, but it's not anonymous in the sense that I can essentially trace where transactions are going from which account to the other.
Okay.
And that already gives me a lot of information. Not always possible. There are ways to sort of mitigate this.
Okay.
And there are other cryptocurrencies which employ maybe more sophisticated techniques that actually allow you to hide who is sending money to whom.
Right, because I thought Bitcoin was like, or cryptocurrencies were fully traceable. Like every transaction that you do is essentially traceable.
In Bitcoin, that's the case.
Yeah.
But there are
cryptocurrencies where it's not.
Yeah. But you can prove it.
right,
using cryptography. That's again what cryptography is.
But in some cases you wouldn't be able. Oh, right, as in you can prove that it's not traceable.
Exactly.
So
that's a big difference.
Yeah.
Between, you know, so in Bitcoin, you know, maybe the situation is that most of the time you can trace. But if you really care about anonymity, are you happy with that? Probably not. You want to be anonymous all the time, right?
Right, yeah. So, but there's a lot of danger of having something that's...
No, of course, of
completely
course.
Non-traceable, yeah.
Like every technology, well, not everyone, but every technology, but like many technology, of course, it can be dangerous.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, because there's also like, I mean, in the recent 3 years, I think there's been a lot of scandals of companies. I think a lot to do also with crypto exchange, but mm-hmm. that have just been involved in money laundering and all that. So it's,
right.
it's very hard to put trust in a cryptocurrency-based system or just a cryptocurrency when you don't understand how it even works.
Yeah, that is true. But I would say, I would say this is more of a societal problem.
Yeah.
We also don't understand how our smartphone works. I don't understand how smartphone. I don't understand how my TV works. I still look. I think maybe, you know, when the technology becomes mature enough, then there is sort of degree of trust that starts building up, and now it's a mess, right? I mean, you see scandals every.
Yeah,
it seems
like a bit of a mess right now.
But I think that
it's very early stages.
Yeah, but I think that's more of a societal problem. It's a societal effect rather than a technological. So I don't know if that's something we can solve with crypto, for example.
Yeah, with cryptography.
Cryptography, yeah. So, but
okay,
maybe, I don't know, who knows.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
It was confusing, but I feel like there's a lot of information here that just needs to click, you know? And I really appreciate also the way you simplified everything down. And I know that especially as an academic and as a researcher, it's hard to do that because you're like, I'm missing out so many key information. But I do think it's really important because if you want to get more people to understand what you're actually doing, you have to simplify it down. And so I really appreciate what you did. I know it wasn't easy.
Sorry for being pedantic.
No worries. It's important so that everyone knows, you know, how the right way is to talk about things. So thank you a lot.
That's it. Thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to learn more about Giulio and his research, you can check out his website, and you can also check out his webpage on the NPI for Security and Privacy website. The links are in the description below. And if you like our podcasts, please make sure to follow us on our Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram page. Thanks again for listening. Bye. Offspring Magazine, the podcast, is brought to you by Max Planck PhDNet Science Communication Group, known as the Offspring Magazine. The intro-outro music is composed by Srinath Ramkumar, and the pre-intro jingle is composed by Gustavo Carrizo. If you have any feedback, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to write us at offspring.podcasts@phdnet.mpg.de. Until next week, stay safe, stay healthy. Bye.